Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
Who plays me from the Crabs?
No, I got to tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics. I got to.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay. I can get cause she don't get too many likes. A curly headed cutie I could turn into my wife. Wait, that means forever, ever, hold up, never mind. Oh, I spy with my little light. I spy with my little light. Oh, I spy with my little light. All right, and welcome to Sportsaholics episode number 146. No train whistle this week. Eric is in New York. Writing on the BET Awards show with Leslie Jones. So they're actually filming the promos right now, which are very funny. I read a couple of them. So guys, watch the BET Awards June 25th, 8 p.m. It's a Sunday. Our good friend Eric Marino will be responsible for a lot of the jokes. You know, he's writing sketches and monologues, things like that. So definitely set your calendar, your timers, your whatevers. June 25th, 8 p.m., BET Awards, hosted by our favorite Leslie Jones. All right, so episode 146 here. I'm going to go with Lee Smith. I mean, look, it's Lee Smith. If you don't even know who he is, he was he's not even in the Hall of Fame. At one time, had the record for most saves in Major League Baseball. I think it was Trevor Hoffman that eventually broke that, but growing up in the Midwest, Lee Smith was a Cardinals pitcher for me because in the early 90s, that's when I was really collecting cards hard. And so all my Lee Smith cards were in a Cardinals jersey, but spent the majority of the 80s with the Cubs. And actually, there was a kind of a 6 degrees of separation with Buck O'Neill, in this case, 1 degree. But Buck O'Neill, who we've discussed in depth in previous episodes, 142 with Bob Kendrick from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Some great Buck O'Neill stories there, if you want to go back and hear those. But Lee Smith was scouted by Buck O'Neill. So it all comes full circle. Let's see here. I'm trying to, this week's episode, we've got, actually it's really, I brought on Jason Lawhead. He's a Cavs fan. One of my favorite comedians, actually. He opens up for Bill Burr all the time on the road, all over the country. Headlines himself when he's not on the road with Bill, all over the country. He's just a really good basketball player, really good guy. So aside from just being a good basketball player and Ohio guy, he's a passionate Cavs fan. So I don't think the Cavs are just going to get walked over, and that's kind of what we get into. And then also, we've got Richard Chapman on this week, and you probably never heard of Richard Chapman because he is one of the main, the linchpin. I'm not sure exactly what his level of participation is other than, very high. I don't know if he's the president or whatever, but of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League organization. His mother played professional baseball throughout the 40s, and Eric and I had bumped into this gentleman at Kauffman Stadium over a month ago when we were back in Kansas City doing our gigs. And it's just a really nice guy. We struck up some really good baseball talk, baseball conversation right off the bat. And then within a minute or two, I was asking for his card. I was like, we'd love to have you on Sportsaholics and just talk about some of the stuff your mom did and some of the stuff you're doing. And so that's on this week's episode also. So it's actually, I felt like we got to do basketball this week just because of the finals and just because everyone's shitting all over the Cavs. And I'm not saying I'm a huge Cavs fan. I'm just saying, like, you got LeBron. You got Kevin Love playing better than he's played in a long time. And Kyrie Irving's just the best point guard in basketball. So I don't see, like, a 4-0 sweep. I've heard that from some. I think it's going to be 4-1. I was like, no, it's going to be, I think whoever loses is getting at least 2 games. So I guess that means it's going at least 6, maybe 7. But what else did I want to get into? The Bryce Harper, Hunter Strickland thing from last weekend. Hunter Strickland's just a redneck. That's the problem. And I mean, Harper's probably a little bit of white trash. He grew up in Vegas. So, you did, look, the lesser of two evils here, I think, is just going to be the white trash and Harper, I guess. See, Strickland, I don't like this guy because back in 14 playoffs, he was the Giants' like young reliever that's throwing 100 in the minors. And anyway, Strickland almost cost the Giants the 14 World Series or just the chance to even be in the World Series. Clearly, he gave up those two home runs to Harper in the NLDS or CS in 14, whatever year that was, which instigated the fight that we all saw last week. But even in the World Series, he almost got in a fight with Lorenzo Cain, I remember. And Lorenzo Cain is a nice dude. He smiles. He's just a fun guy, not fighting guy. But I can't remember if Strickland had hit him or walked him or what. But Cain said something to him, and he called him boy. He was, go to first, boy, something like that, which, you know, isn't dropping in bombs, but it is kind of. I mean, you don't just call someone boy. If someone called me a boy, I'd be like, who are you? I'm sorry, what? Piece of shit. You know, and then there'd be fighting words. So I'm just saying, Strickland's an asshole. Harper, it's a lot bigger than I knew he was a big guy, but something about when he was swinging there, I think he hulked up. I mean, he looked like Teen Wolf, right? I mean, Michael J. Fox, almost half expected Michael J. Fox to come out of that scrum. I mean, he just, with his hair all going everywhere. I mean, that's a werewolf-looking motherfucker right there. And Jeff Samardzija, you're still an idiot. I love your 1-7 record with a 5-plus ERA or high fours, probably 5, just because, you know, you're awful and always been overrated. I don't know. You're like the Antoine Walker of Major League Baseball pitchers. You just, people, I guess maybe you hit your spots, whatever. You're fooling the scouts into signing you, to trading you, to think. I mean, you got traded for Addison Russell originally, way back when. You're just not that good of a pitcher. And then I'm looking at my wall right now, and I've got a picture of the big brawl in Chicago, the Kansas City Star. This is from 2 years ago, and it's Samardzija and Volquez, and he's Samardzija's face planting. I don't know who. Anyway, it was the Ventura brawl. This is from 2 years ago when everyone was picking on the Royals. But what I'm saying is Samardzija played football, so he thinks he's going to bully everybody. And what are you doing? He ran into the pile, just bounced off Michael Morris, who's now on a concussion protocol for the next 2 weeks. Like, I don't even understand understand what he was. If you watch it, he's trying to sucker punch. He leads with the first thing of Jeff Samardzija's that enters the picture is his hand, which tells me he's trying to sucker punch Strickland, which, look, or not Strickland, but Harper, which tells me, you know, that he's a punk. All right, I'm done ranting about that. All right, we'll get into, you know, I think I'm just going to go to Chapman first. Richard, this is, okay, so again, guys, this is the AAGPBL, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. I don't have his card in front of me. The guy does it all. He's down in Bentonville, Arkansas, helping out with documentaries, and he's talking to, you know, he's involved in baseball, and he loves baseball, and it's part of his family. He actually, try it out. But I don't want to ruin any more of it. When we come back from break, we'll be talking with Richard Chapman from the AAGPBL.
Everybody, we want to introduce you to a new friend of ours that I got to meet when she's and I were in Kansas City, and she's and friends were nice enough to take me to my very first Royals game at Kauffman Stadium. One of the most fortuitous meetings I think we had was he met Rick Chapman, who was just a fountain of interesting stories. He tried out for the Royals. I want to say, what was it, Rick, in 70 or 72, something like that?
1970.
And
first of all, welcome to Sportsaholics. Thanks for coming on and talking some baseball history. To let you listeners in, Rick works currently at Kauffman Stadium, and like Eric mentioned, that's how we bumped into him. I was wandering around the team store. Eric had a helmet full of nachos, so he was...
They weren't nachos. They were the stream fries. It was the greatest thing I've ever had in a stadium. It was a souvenir batting helmet full of French fries and Kansas City barbecued beef. It was amazing. Best thing I've ever had in a stadium. But I also, you know, had about a half pound of food in my hand and wasn't just going to go cavalierly walking around a store where I could spill and have to buy a lot of things.
But we wanted to have Rick on because not only did he try out for Major League Baseball, works at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City, but his mother actually was a professional ball player herself. And so as soon as we found that out, Rick, we made a point to get you on Sportsaholics just to talk about what that was like, you know, growing up with a mom, mother as a ball player.
Well, what's really interesting about all of that, we played ball and mom would play catch with us. And we said, well, you throw pretty well. How can you do that? You're a girl, you know? So, well, I played ball. And she never really talked it about her playing professional ball in detail other than I played ball. And I had a brother who wanted to be a catcher. My mom said, no, this is how you catch. And she showed us that and just amazed us. But she never really talked much about it. Until about 1979, a newsletter came out of Michigan from a former ball player. They were trying to make an attempt to get as many of the former players together for a big national reunion in Chicago in 1982. So that's when I really started finding out more about it, was in late 79, early 1980, about her playing professional baseball. So unfortunately, she passed away in August of 81. So I got a hold of the lady, June Pepis is her name, and she just passed away a couple weeks ago. They're all getting up in age.
Sure.
And I asked if I could go to the reunion in Chicago to represent my mother, and they said, sure, and I've been going ever since.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, what's the, for the listeners, where can they find stuff online or direct them?
Okay, the organization is the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. So if you put All American Girls Professional Baseball, you'll get to the website, and it's aagpbl.org. And that gets you into the website. And we had our conference call this evening. I'm president of the board of directors for the Players Association. And we're also working to try to get some more social media out there. So we're working with somebody that has a website for the Women's Baseball Network. So we're working to get on more social media with that. And then we have somebody in New Jersey that's working. She's a book author, children's books, and she's working with some people out on the East Coast to get more information out there. So our website's being rebuilt, but the old one is still out there. It has a lot of history. It shows who's on the board of directors, some of the activities that's going on, some pictures. But we're working to improve all of that.
And we'll put, and listeners, we'll put the link up in the bio of the episode.
Right.
So you can just one-click shopping or / donation or supporting or, you know, whatever you want to go with. Now on a personal, like your personal baseball career. Now, where did it start and end, or is that something that you knew you wanted to try and do it from an early age?
We grew up southwest of Cleveland, Ohio, and as soon as we had something called Hot Stove Baseball League. It was different than Little League. We played by the major league rules, which means at 8 years old, you could lead off. The pitcher had to do the stretch, and they called balks and all of that. So we, at that age, Dick Vail was my manager. This is somebody that you can never forget. And they taught us all the basics, and I'm not talking real good baseball at age eight. And then I worked my way up, and then we moved a little bit further south. And when I got into the 17 to 19 age group, my home field, I got recruited to play 25 miles away. And, of course, back then you're not allowed to get paid or anything. But And then in baseball, 3 years of varsity baseball, I only had four strikeouts. So I always hit the ball. So.
Yeah, you had a nice batting average, it sounded like.
Yeah, I batted between 375 and 400 in high school and summer league. And with that, getting some publicity, I had the letter from the Kansas City Baseball Royals Academy. And that's where I had the tryout. And it was actually May 30th of 1970 in Dayton, Ohio. So we got started with it, and then didn't finish because of the rain out. And then with mom being a single mom raising six kids, I had a job. I had to work. So I didn't really, I guess, take it that seriously. I needed that $1.70 an hour I was making.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone's got to pull their weight, so, you know.
Yep. So anyhow, that last year in the community college, I was in wrestling class to separate my shoulders. So I played that last year. And 8-4 pitching record, ERA about 3.0, batted 405, and our team was invited to a tournament sponsored by the Major League Scouts. And I pitched against Youngstown and walked the first batter, second batter, launched one over left field fence, so I'm down 2-0. The catcher, he played for Bowling Green State University, he chewed me out, and I didn't give up a hit the rest of the game, lost 2-1. That was the last game I played. That was August of 71. And I hung up my spikes and had to get a job. So I went from Cleveland to Pittsburgh to upstate New York with Grant's Department Store as a restaurant manager. I quit there in 72, went to General Motors in Detroit from 72 to 05, retired, and came to Kansas City in 2005.
Yeah, it's interesting that you came sort of full circle, trying out for the Kansas City Royals and then working in Kauffman Stadium. That's an interesting thing, and that's how we bumped into you.
And that's exactly right. I used to pitch baseballs. I would pitch in hats and shirts.
Now, how did you end up at Kauffman Stadium, and what made you just take – what made you say, I want to work in a stadium? You want to be back around the game?
You know, it's from the people you meet. Hmm. My first we moved into a maintenance provided, and they have a golf course here. And the first night of in our golf league – two of the guys worked there and said, "Hey, we need help." I said, "Well, I could do that, you know."
Sure.
And that's how I got in, just from playing in the golf league. So, and I love it. I talk to people from all over the country. Especially when they come in with their uniforms, and me living in Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Syracuse and Detroit, I tell you what, some of the people, you got to love it.
And you met two fun guys who do a podcast in California. And you're good at what you do. We got a card from you.
You showed me those barbecue fries, and guess what I had to try? I had to try them. I haven't had them.
You sold them.
I'm a bit of a salesman. It does. Yeah, I'll even sell other people's
cars. In-house sales.
Yeah, that's right.
They are awesome.
Yeah. No, yeah. I hope you got the price that Miss Jackie got. I got that for $6. That was it's a $23 item. I think Miss Jackie had
and Rick,
a star.
I know you didn't finish them. I know that didn't happen.
I didn't eat the helmet. I got the small portion.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
okay.
You got
the regular person size.
So a person Rick, a person did ask me if you are the little boy in League of Their Own, because, you know, the mom, there's a catcher, you know, it's like, so we just, I guess, but you didn't really know about that, but tell us
right,
more about
that, that's interesting. Everybody calls me Stillwell because I go to all the reunions. My mom played. And, well, my mom played from 43 to 49. She retired June 15th of 49. Huh. And then my older brother was born in September of 50. And then the sixth kid was born in June of 59. So she had six of us in 9 years. I was born in 52.
Wow.
So I wasn't Stillwell. And I tell everybody I have five boys and a girl. All the boys were angels, of course.
California but angels, Anaheim angels.
I kind of say no, I'm still well, and they look at me and say, "Oh yeah, right." But
that's fun.
It's fun. It was a great movie, but there's a couple of portions of the movie that were kind of based on my mom.
Now was that what was that like? You were recently in Bentonville, Arkansas for was it a film festival?
Yeah, that was the third annual Bentonville Film Festival, kind of spearheaded by Gina Davis.
Sure.
And it's basically for media and movie and documentaries for women, getting more women involved in that market. And there's a lot of good talented women out there, and this is trying to highlight some of the things they've done. So they have a lot of activities during the week. They show a lot of the women's that produce films and documentaries throughout the week. Then they have a big award ceremony one evening. I was able to go to that. That was really really neat to see. And they had a couple other events that you go in and you know, you just talk to people. And then on Sunday they ended up with a celebrity game. So Gina Davis and six of the actresses were there, and we had four of the women that played in the league were there, two from California and one from Michigan and one from Florida. Yep.
Which
and
my wife and I, I'm looking at the website right now. I happen to be looking at your website. So what yes. team, and I see there's a good section about the 47, 48, 49. So what team was your mother on?
1943 was the Racine Belles. Uh-huh. 1944, Milwaukee Chicks.
Oh,
1945, Grand Rapids Chicks.
Yeah.
1946, 7, 8, and 9, Muskegon Lassies.
I like that there were the Lassies. It's funny because there's like the Chicago Colleens. Like it's interesting. It's interesting some of the names that they have.
Well, it's like with the Negro Leagues, they put Black or Giant, in front of that's how you.
Yeah, they had the Springfield Sallies, the Chicago Colleens, Muskegon Lassies, Milwaukee or Grand Rapids Chicks, the Minneapolis Millerettes.
So your mom was Dorothy Chapman.
Yes.
Mickey. Her nickname is Mickey. Her maiden name's McAlpin, I guess, huh? Is that why, or is it because she's Irish?
Nope. There, in 1945, newspaper article had an article about her. It says, Grand Rapids Chicks own Iron Mike. And you read in there about her being the highest paid catcher, da-da-da, and she kind of mimics Mickey Cochran.
Okay.
So that's how she got the nickname Mickey, because she played like Mickey Cochran as a catcher, and he was a Hall of Fame catcher for the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah. Now, with you moving around so much, do you have an allegiance to a team? I mean, you work for the Royals. I mean, are you forced to say the Royals right now?
Boy, I tell you what, if I say anything different than the Royals, boy, I'd be in hot water.
I know. Let's say as a kid.
As a kid, it was the Cleveland Indians. You had Sutton Sam McDowell, Sonny Siebert, Jimmy Pearsall. Rocky Colavito played there a little bit. And I grew up knowing those guys.
When you were a kid, that was, decades past? Like Larry Doby and Bob Feller and those guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those guys were basically, late 50s, 60s. And then I spent 3 months in Pittsburgh training for restaurant management, and I saw Clemente play for a couple of games in Pittsburgh in 71.
Wow.
And that was pretty, that's at Three Rivers Stadium. Back then it was a new stadium. Now it's gone and they have a different one.
That's true. They have a nice one.
And then Detroit, the 84 Tigers, the way they started off like 33 and whatever, that was awesome. And we get tickets and you see these guys. I mean, they were big guys and they were nice guys too. They had a heck of a team. So 84 Tigers is like, to me, that was the best team.
Kirk Gibson. Yep.
Was on that team also.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe a young Alan.
Yeah. Gibson, Gibson could have played pro football. He was a star at Michigan State for football and baseball.
Yeah, and that's right, because then he gets the extra local boy love in Detroit on top of being a celebrity athlete.
Him and Dave Rosema were buddies, and they married sisters.
Oh, that's great.
I used to go to the name Bob Kawakowski, who played for the Detroit Lions in the 60s and 70s, and then his son Scott Kawakowski played for Notre Dame, then 3 years in Philadelphia, and then 8 years with the Detroit Lions. I was on a charity committee with Bob Kawakowski for 10 years, so I got to see a lot of the ball players, whether it be baseball. I saw Jim Northrup. He was a nice guy, and some of the football players. Now, so you try to get involved in the charity events, too, with some of these guys. They don't get a lot of recognition. It's usually the bad news, but some of them really help the communities out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it's nice, too, when you see, people in professional sports doing good with their name or with their money and with their charities.
And you got to love the game. You can be in Kansas City. Hey, I love Moose. I love Perez, this and that. But you also got to look at these other guys around there. And growing up in Cleveland, you knew about some of these guys like Brooke Robinson. Well, you can't say anything bad about him,
Nope.
You got to love the game. You go to a game, you root for your team, but you want to see good plays. You don't want to see anybody get hurt and all that kind of stuff.
Yep, and root against the Yankees, and that's about it.
Well, there was somebody at the stadium the other day when the Yankees were in town. I'm finding out where they're from because I lived in New York for a while. And one guy says, I'm from St. Louis, and I hate the Cardinals, so I have to go with the Yankees. So that was unusual.
That is very unusual, especially out of St. Louis, and they're good. I'll give St. Louis credit. They're good baseball fans. My argument is, it's like, how can you not be a good baseball fan when your team makes the playoffs every other year? It's easy.
That's right.
It's easy to be a good fan when your team's good every year. Rick, where can the listener go to just find out some more information, or where? Or even make donations, or do you have any events
on the website? Yeah, on the website there is an area where you can make donations. So some of the things that we're doing, we're going to Fan Fest in Miami. You know, that's a 5-day event
for the All-Star weekend.
Game.
Okay, nice.
So I'll be there. That's good. Right now I've got four of the women coming to sign autographs, and I got some others that, you know, we have to help them along. So we have some associates to help them along. So we'll be there for that. And
well, that's wonderful.
These women always pay their own way. And as an association, we try to, you got to watch how you do things. So we help pay some of the expenses, but we're trying to get hopefully some corporate support down the road. And then in August, we're going to be at the next reunion in Cincinnati. And then in 2018, we're going to host the reunion here in Kansas City.
Oh,
that's
great. Do you know, is that going to be in the spring of 18?
It's probably going to be September or October. I'm meeting with the hotel this week. They gave me some preliminary information. Sure. We're going to go in there and da-da-da because – we got to keep it away from the bulk time with the higher hotel.
Oh, yes. Sure. Absolutely.
And I was just looking. Oh, good. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, part of that, I'm looking for corporate help and everything. So we try to do fundraising. We'll try to sell merchandise and stuff like that to help defray some of the costs.
Yeah, because she's, you know, I was just looking. In fact, I was Rick. I was looking actually at your mom's bio, and I know you wrote part of it. Because it's like you just when you look at some of the stuff. Like, I mean, there's some amazing stories, guys. You should check out this website because you realize that these women of the greatest generation, and so these guys are not just. I mean, it's one thing to be female and playing professional baseball, and that's an accomplishment in itself, but then you remember it's like the war is going on. There's an amazing story that I believe your mom gets divorced during one season. There's also a point where she believes that her husband she's told her husband is killed in action, and then goes out and plays a game and tells the press later. But then it turns out that her husband was she gets letters from him from he wasn't correctly identified, and he was like in a hospital in Italy. So I mean, imagine you just got told your husband died. Now you have to go play a baseball game and then tell the press about it. Like, I mean, that's you know that's not something that a Tom Brady or, you know what I mean, like Pedro Martinez has to deal with.
That's why they're called the greatest generation.
They're the greatest generation.
Right. Well, part of the story on that is mom got a phone call from her mother in Cleveland, Ohio on a Saturday night. Mom played Saturday night, played a doubleheader on Sunday, then announced it to the press that Tom McGuire was killed. That was June of 44. Then August 1st or 2nd, she got letters from him. So I don't know the whole story.
Right.
Was he wounded or lost or captured or whatever? But he come back. And then people want to know, well, how come my name is Chapman and not McGuire? Okay, now you got to know the rest of the story.
Sure.
during the war in the off season, you know, the season of the women went basically May to September. They had 120 games. They played doubleheaders every Sunday, and it was a very rigorous schedule. So in the off season in Cleveland during the war, she drove a taxi cab.
Wow.
So when Tom McGuire comes back in August or September of 44, she's going to take care of him and da da da. And he says, well, you need to quit baseball and do that. So I'm making $120 a week. That's good money back in the 40s.
Sure.
And so one thing led to another, and his family started moving in, and you had to know my mother. She'd help you if you needed help, but you better pull your own weight. So she says, hey, they got to get a job. They got to help. So things didn't work out. So she finally said, it's either them or me. Well, she ended up leaving them, divorced them, and 2 years later married my dad. But some of that is played out in the movie. You know where the telegram comes and the husband's killed in action? And that was, I think it was Penny Marshall's daughter that went out with the chaperone in the movie. Then the next scene is the wounded husband comes back and the story goes on. So we met Penny Marshall when they opened the first display of women in baseball at the National Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. That was November 5th of 88. And we met Penny Marshall, and I told her the story about mom and her husband, Tom McGuire, and she kind of put a little of that into the movie, a little bit different flavor.
I would say she most definitely did.
And then the other compliment was, I mean, not only that, because when you were telling me a story about how the first reunion, I mean, your mom got a letter in 79, for the reunion was supposed to be in 82. I just want to clue all to our young listeners out there, anyone who's a millennial, it's like, hey, guys, there's no internet in 1979. It's like people just have the yellow pages. They're just people on phones. There's no internet. It's just only three channels on TV. So there's not like you guys, these women don't have a they didn't have like a Facebook to join or track each other down. This is like this is like carrier pigeon or letters that we're getting sent like this. So it's a really amazing
mail.
Really amazing. And this also, it makes me think, because you know, we were just in Kansas City at the Negro League Baseball Museum, and the president, Bob Kendricks, and it's one of the things that he said, it's like, you know, these are players that this story has a time limit. The people who live during this era are unfortunately leaving us. And so this is something that seems very similar to everything that the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League is facing, is that these people, these stories will be gone at some point completely unless they are passed down. And thank you for doing, thank you for helping keeping the story alive.
Luckily for Rick, you know, you've made it a passion. Clearly, you know, a passion for baseball, you know, and this is to take a project like this, you know, under your wing or just to help it out.
You know, did you ever tease your mom? Do you have a better batting average than she did? Because it just seems like.
Yeah, I did.
I mean, you know, she's a great player, but she only had three. I'm seeing she had three home runs in her career, and, you know, it was a. You know, she wasn't. It wasn't for the bat. I think it was
a
solid defense.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she's like you said. Well, she was known for.
She was a good catcher and this and that. And she, one year she got the most errors for a catcher. And I asked her about that. She says, well, I throw it to second base. They're supposed to be there. If they're not there and it goes to center field, I got the error instead of the shortstop or the second baseman. So she had a rocket arm. But another thing that people need to understand, in the 40s, these women probably didn't travel 20 miles away from home.
Right.
Now the war goes on. Okay, some of them have go into factories, and if it weren't for them helping out, who knows what happened.
Right.
But then this league started. They came from all over the country. And you're talking about, you want me to go where? You want me to go to Chicago for the tryouts? You know, and then some of them come from California. And a couple of the ladies that are still living, they can tell you the stories. I've heard the stories umpteen times. But it's just amazing. It's like, the parents, you know, some are underage. That's why they had chaperones. How can I trust that, you know, you're taking my girl away and, you know, the other side of the country? You heard the term, they're pioneers of their day. And that's, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean,
it's asking a lot, you know.
As a parent, you had to be scared to death.
Absolutely.
You know, and then they're like, for $120 a week? All right, okay.
Well, they started out in 40, 50 a week and this and that. And then some of the premier players, every time they expanded, they would shuffle the players around trying to even the teams out, you know.
Yes.
And Ma was evidently pretty popular and stuff like that. But I've been part of a vision committee and archive committee. And several years ago, we went to the University of Notre Dame. And they were looking for documents, and they had some files from South Bend being there for the whole 12 years. And they had a file on my mother that I had never seen before. And it was basically a questionnaire. What do you think you want to do when you're done with baseball? And she had it in there. I wanted to have a farm. I want to call it the Forlorn Acres. And she did that. She raised horses. And we knew she had show horses. And 1965, she had a Champion Morgan horse and ended up on the front cover of the Morgan Horse magazine that year. So she was very good with animals, and doing all of that, she never talked baseball, but she'd play with us a little bit. And then before she died, the newsletter come out and I started hearing, you know, learning more about it.
It's amazing. You just an amazing mom, an amazing son, an amazing family. You guys seem like you sort of succeed or find good things everywhere you go and find interesting stories. You're a hell of a storyteller, and that's one of the highest compliments I can pay you.
She was the team captain. That's all I can say. We all had our chores. You had to do this, you had to do that. And old Chauncey next door needs the cows. You got to milk the cows. 50 cents an hour more than what you're making in hind end. Okay, so you go do that. So the only job I turned down was working in a funeral home when I was a teenager.
Rightfully so. Oh, man.
Rick, thank you for spending some time with us this afternoon, and we hope to keep in touch with you, especially around FanFest or next year's reunion, because we'd love to have maybe a couple of the ladies, if they have time, if we can get them on a phone call. That would be it'd be lovely to add a little bit to our archives here.
You know, I'm in Kansas City, or we're both in Kansas City doing comedy frequently, so, you know, maybe it works out. We're in town, and we'll just come by face-to-face. I'd love that. And again, listeners, that's AAGPBL.com. AAGPBL.com. Go there, support.
O-R-G.
.org. I'm sorry. .org. O-R-G.
Yep.
And so AAGPBL.org. Rick, thank you so much, Rick Chapman.
And remember, guys, if you're in the Kansas City area and you go to Kauffman Stadium, you could see Rick live and in person doing what he does best, telling interesting stories, greeting people, meeting people from all over the country. Just great at what you do, Rick. We appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thank you very much. And call me anytime. And maybe when I'm in Miami at FanFest, I'll text you and see if I can get you to talk to a couple of ladies.
Oh,
that'd
be tremendous. That would be the best.
Yep. I was at FanFest in San Diego last year. It's a great time. You'll enjoy it.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was there. I had five of them there signing autographs.
Know that in the future.
Now, exactly.
Now we've made contacts. We have friendships for life. Rick, thank you so much. Yep. All right, we're going to sign off from there. We'll be back.
The sun came out today. We're born again. There's new grass on the field. Around the third and headed for home. It's a brown-eyed, handsome man. Anyone can understand the way I feel. Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Look at me. I can be.
All right. Thank you, Richard, for coming on. And again, Eric's gone. He slipped out the door. He's in New York, so you won't be able to hear any follow up from Eric. But you're a great guy, and we'll continue to, you know, if you need us for anything, reach back out. We'll happily retweet, repost, re anything. And again, listeners, that's AAGPBL.com. Go there and check it out. They've like you mentioned, they've got a traveling exhibit that'll be at the All-Star Game this year down in Miami. So if you happen to be down there, by all means, go and check that out. All right, and so coming up here, we're going to talk to this friend of the show, Sportsaholics, friend of myself personally, Jason Lawhead, great comedian, great just sports mind. I mean, you'll hear it in this interview. He knows his stuff, and that's why we had him on. And I wanted somebody to defend LeBron. That's all I wanted. I wanted a little bit of LeBron defense. We got it with Jason Lawhead, at Jason Lawhead on Twitter, and then he's got a really good podcast, Lawhead's Court, also, that I would highly recommend. So when we get back from break, we'll be with Jason Lawhead, comedian, Cavaliers, Indians fan extraordinaire.
The gun so run, reveal me. Cleveland is the city where the thugs come from. Cleveland, yeah, the ones come down. Down up in the same town. Get them up with a dub, with the one they get the dub, get the fit for Rose. But the liquor store closed, get them up with the 40, we sub, can you roll up? Raise your hand, never this stiff on the ripper. More water, no water, the cup of this fresh, cause we got this one hit the creeper. Peep the strippers against the double block, block. Put them in Roscoe, sweat them in block. Cover better drop when the gunshot pop. The top and the body get into all stop. Whenever them trouble knock.
Like, no one thinks that Cleveland's got a chance in this thing. So
I know it boggles my mind that they're the defending champ.
It's crazy.
It boggles my mind that they're the defending champ, right? They've won three straight against them. And what I don't see is like how people really evaluate it. I mean, I think haven't we learned enough about everything in the world of the NBA with that. We know that matchups are everything. And because Golden State is 12-0 against a beleaguered West, people want to still believe that the Western Conference is good. It isn't. It isn't any good. There isn't any good Western Conference team. If Tony Parker was gone and Tim Duncan was gone and Kawhi Leonard was gone by the middle of the third quarter, the Cavs would sweep that Spur team too. The Jets think none of these Western Conference teams are any much better than anything that's going on in the East. That's the point. And the whole thing is that you can sit there and go, oh, the Warriors, because they score. It's like, first off, what was proven last year is they can't stop Kyrie Irving, and they did nothing to bridge that. Getting Kevin Durant to score 28 a game doesn't stop Kyrie Irving.
That's a great point. I mean, because that is the only – Steph Curry's not a point guard. He is – you know, they really – that's the one position on their team that they really don't have. They've kind of avoided having a true – like, they'll have Draymond Green bring the ball up the court, you know, or
well, but the thing is we are a deeper team. We show them a couple of cards that they didn't even see in a loss last year, which means let's start with the fact that they have got nothing to stop what they couldn't stop out of Kyrie last year. And you saw what he was able to do to the Celtics when he wants the ball. I mean, the fact is the Cavs have LeBron James, they have him, and they still have a stone-cold killer without him. And Kyrie is, I mean, Kobe Bryant is heaping his praises. I mean, right now Kobe Bryant is saying that Kyrie is a baby mama. He is a killer in his own right. And the thing is what I don't think any of these guys factor together is that now Kyrie and LeBron have tasted that championship blood together. They've gone through that. That's there. You saw that approach coming into the playoffs. They went 12-1 in a game where LeBron was sick with the flu, and I think that they checked out up 20 thinking Boston had already quit. And Boston hadn't quit, and by the time the Cavs tried to flip it back the switch, LeBron was already sick and gone out of that game, and they never got it back. And they lost on a fucking carnival shot that wins a stuffed animal on the buzzer at home, or they'd be 12-0.
I mean, that might be one of the best comeback of the entire 2017, barring some miracle in the finals. I mean, that game was ridiculous. We were actually recording last week's episode while that game was happening, and during the first segment, we're like, okay, all right, Celtics down. Fucking, what was it, 28 or something like that? And then by the time we finished the episode, we were like, oh, shit, man, they're like down 3 points now. And
They were down 23 was the biggest lead. But, yeah, 23 was the biggest lead, I think, you know. But at one point it was 72-51. And I think the Cavs were doing it without LeBron. That we were hitting some threes. Love was having a good start. And you credit that win to Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens, I don't think, thought his team was going to win that game, but at halftime he went in there and said something to say, don't get beat by 50 again. Because the Cavs were 30 to 40 points better than that team every other game in that series, basically.
And in
game four, when LeBron got into the early foul trouble, they still outscored them by 30 going away when they started their comeback 16 down. So that ended up being a 30-point swing. So the Cavs were, you know, people, you know, act like, you know, the West was so much better. What were the Jazz? What were these teams? Who are these teams? Portland, these other teams that are in the front. The West, with especially a hurt San Antonio team, isn't any good as much as the East isn't. And it doesn't make me – I just don't understand. It's like, first off, you're giving them no chance, but – they're 7-6 in the last two finals. The Spurs are 7-6 against the Cavs, and their only title is against LeBron, Mike Miller, and James Jones. That's it. I mean, Durant has never won anything.
Yeah.
And head to head, LeBron and him, the body of work speaks for itself. LeBron's on long rest going in. That favors him. It's been shown both game ones, Toronto and Boston. The Cavs have looked the best in game one. San Antonio, if they've done anything to look, you know, somewhat subpar, it's been in first quarters against not just San Antonio, but against Utah in game one, and especially in a couple of first quarters against some other games. So the Cavs, from the Toronto-Boston series on, the Cavs have had dominant first quarters. And the numbers show that, oh, I want to say some high 70% of NBA games, whoever wins the first quarter wins the game.
Yeah, you're right. I did notice that throughout the – like, Golden State can get off to some of the – just – they're not only slow starts, but the look on everyone's faces, too. It's weird. They get in these funks that I guess they stand out a little bit more because it is Golden State. So when they're not making every shot, you recognize it maybe a little bit more than right. It would if it happened on a subpar team. But you're right, though. I mean, if Cleveland comes out firing and
– Well, you know, my thing is if you watched game one, and a lot of people just dismiss it to Golden State being rusty, but – Game one of the San Antonio Spurs series in Golden State, when Leonard leaves the game, they're up 20 at the 7:38 mark. He's got 26 points at the time, on pace for a 46-point game, getting to the basket like LeBron, finishing around the basket, getting shots off, and playing the defensive end only as close to LeBron-like that the Warriors see, a guy that can come from behind and block a shot, a guy that can play the big long arm hand defense and just get a steal going the other way. And Golden State doesn't see that ever. All season long, they don't see that kind of defense. But yet, people don't factor it as like, okay, look, LeBron's playing at the same level he was playing at when he blocked Iguodala last year. He's playing like that, okay? Why aren't you – like, how can you just dismiss Cleveland when LeBron is playing like he blocked Iguodala all the time? You haven't answered the Kyrie problem. Yes, you've added Durant, but you can score without, like, you'll get those points through everything else. You know, Livingston, people off the bench, guys that you sacrifice. And I'm going to tell you something. They haven't seen a close game, and if they have to get into some close battles down the stretch, and it's LeBron physically versus Durant after a haggard fourth quarter and built up minutes. And, you know, I think if we can force Durant to shoot fallaways off his back heels, anything from 18 feet out, don't let him get down the lane. You know, we've proved that we can defend Steph and play at the three-point line in the last two series. I mean, even the series they won, that was Iguodala and Livingston and the bench that won them that series. We shut Clay and Steph down both series this year and last year.
And look, you mentioned both of those guys. If you're relying on Iguodala, who is now, I think, got to be close to his 12th year in the, you know, he's getting up there. I remember I was still a young pup when I remember watching him at Arizona is how old he is. And as far as Sean Livingston, you know, he's retorn knees. He's getting up there in age too. I mean, Golden State isn't a young team. I mean, they are susceptible to as much as anyone to injury and fatigue. And, you know, and then, but you make a couple 3-point shots and people are quick to forget that, yeah, these guys are mortal. They can get injured just like everybody else can.
Well, and they're really good, too. I'm not saying they're not, you know. And
for sure.
But to be a heavy favorite to have all of these people, to have some people believing that they're so good they can sweep, it's like, first off, the blueprint is game seven, really, when it comes down to it. If you look at game seven last year, we let Draymond Green beat us. And that's what we did. And I'm going to tell you, if we can get to offensively making Draymond Green try to beat us on the perimeter, or in anxious situations, and trying to funnel it back through Durant and making him take tough shots all day long, contested shots, hit going to the basket, and stay on Curry like we guarded him last year on the perimeter, not let them shake loose. I think, you know, I don't understand how, you know, you can't look at things like that are on paper, that are matchups. I mean, like I said, if we've known anything about the NBA, it's that matchups are the thing, and I believe that they're just – I believe a lot of predictions are off of box scores, which is really weird to me. After everything we've learned, I think a lot of people are predicting this series off of box scores, and I just – I don't know how you can do that.
Well, I think – I mean, look, if this thing goes to seven again I mean, God bless Magic Johnson and Larry Bird from the 80s. But, I mean, really, this matchup now, you could argue after, you know, a four-year window, like this could arguably be one of, like, the greatest rivalries in NBA history, depending on how this season, this series turns out. And then, you know, if they can meet again in the finals even next year. I mean, this is what the NBA needs. They need villains. They need good guys. They need the powerhouse team. And then somehow they've made LeBron as an underdog, which I thought I would never hear ever. And I don't think I've ever heard, you know, before the last couple of years. I mean, it's great for the NBA. I haven't looked at their numbers, but I'm only assuming they've got to be as high as they were mid-90s, late 90s.
Well, I mean, that I don't know. I would say I would agree to this, you know, point that you made about this being something legendary to the Magic and Bird eras and those types of finals, and even the Pistons and you know, some of the battles they went through with the Celtics and Lakers, which was kind of cool. It was like that third team. And, you know, you have the Spurs that have been successful as well. But this is, you're right. And I think what would make this even more intriguing in the future is if the Cavs won. And it's not because I want them to win. It's just because then you would still have Durant ringless. You would have this, aging. But, like, there would be even more ingredients to throw into the pot going forward. If it is going to be the most legendary of all legendary finals rivalries, if it's going to surpass Wilt and Russell, if it's going to surpass Magic and Bird, and if it's going to, you know, surpass, whatever else, you know, LeBron.
We'll go Shaq beating versus Olajuwon. Take it.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah. No. Whatever. Like, the two notable ones are Wilt and Bill.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Magic and Bird. If it is, I think that would kind of take it down that road a little bit, because Durant is new to this thing. He wasn't in the first two. So, I like our chances is always what I say. I like our chances. We have LeBron. We have a stone cold killer in Kyrie. We rebound great at the rim. And the other thing is what people aren't factoring into. Last year, Bogut was a matchup that made life hell on Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. We're free of him. And right now, Kevin Love's playing the best basketball he's played at both ends in a Cavs jersey ever.
Oh, my God. Some of those passes he made last week were just incredible. I mean, Love's firing on all cylinders.
You know,
Kyle Korver looks good
out there, and I love the way our bench is playing. We stretch the floor with Korver. I think you'll see Channing Frye in this series a little bit more than you saw him in Boston. I think you'll get a little bit you're obviously going to get some Richard Jefferson, because he's great in 50-50 ball situations. He's great on that, like, short bursts of second unit stuff. And, guy creating things in 50-50 scenarios and picking up balls that, are loose and, doing some stuff, you know, hitting a three for you here or there. And Korver, the way he stretched the floor, Deron Williams is playing. If you could make a backup second unit all-star team, he would be on it. There'd be no doubt he'd be the starting point guard of the second unit NBA all-star team right now, or at least playoffs. Between playoff teams, and I like our chances.
If
Steve Kerr is not on the bench, check that box too. I mean,
that's a good point,
because Mike Brown has not had to coach a close game down the stretch except game one, where the Spurs fell apart. Once they lost Leonard, they crumbled. I mean, Trump could have coached that game to a win. You know what I mean? Like, that's how easy that one was. So you put Mike Brown in a tight collared situation with 40.6 left in a close game, and there's LeBron on the other side and veteran bench guys like Shumpert maybe out there on the ball, and you got to try to get somebody to believe in your dry erase board. Good luck, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, look, how many years – because Mike Brown, I was trying to remember this. Was he he was the coach that was with the Lakers for 12 games one season?
He was LeBron's first coach in Cleveland.
Oh, okay. And then they fired him, right? And then he went to the Lakers.
Yeah, they fired him before LeBron made the decision. They just knew that LeBron didn't want him. We didn't know which way LeBron was going on the decision. They fired him. They were hoping that LeBron was going to stay. They had Tom Izzo ready to come from Michigan State. And when LeBron went to Miami, Izzo backed out. So they went and hired Byron Scott, I think, right off the get, and then they brought Brown back when they before they even thought before after Brown's debacle on L.A. The team brought Brown back to coach the team before they knew LeBron was going to return. Once LeBron returned, they fired Brown before he ever coached again.
Oh my God! See, I had forgotten all about that stuff.
In Cleveland, we call him Mike Clown. No, I
listeners, real quick before I forget, Jason Law, go to jasonlawhead.com. Is that right, Jason?
Yeah, we're on it. Yeah. It's go to my Twitter right now. We're on a little bit of revamp a little bit. It's under construction.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can go to jasonlaw.com. It's just kind of a landing page. I'm kind of changing the image of it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And,
I see. I'm there. Right. Oh, okay. He's under construction.
I'm going to be at the Laugh Factory in Reno up there June 13th through that Sunday, which is like,
coming 2 weeks. Damn it, I'm going to be up there at the end of June. That would have been too nice if we were both up there at the same time.
I'm going to be Laugh Factory in Vegas the 19th through the 24th. And, some other spots around and here and there.
And then, of
course, follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, at Lawhead's Court, too. And
or at Jason Lawhead or at Lawhead's Court. More at Jason Lawhead is what I tweet at. My podcast is Lawhead's Court. That's my Instagram. Follow me on all those little surf channels. I've got some, 112 episodes of backlog episodes of my podcast, so check that out.
It's good
you
stuff.
Can even hear one from, they go far back to when I hated LeBron when he was in Miami. It's the funny thing. And then I actually have a podcast where I read the letter and react to it. A lot of people remember where they were when, Kennedy got shot. I remember where I was when I read the letter.
Do you remember where you were last year when the
Cavs
clinched?
It was a rainy day in New York City. I was in New York City at the time when the letter came out and was released on SI. And I read it, and thank God it was raining that day because nobody could notice my tears.
Dude, hey, listeners, I've known Jason probably for the better part of 10 years now. We met on the basketball courts in here in Hollywood, and so a lot of the comedians will play on the weekends. And there was a really exciting. There was a really well represented with comedians basketball league, and I have a lot of admiration, listeners, for this man's jump shot. This guy. If you leave him open in the corner, I mean, if you want to talk about Steph Curry in the comedy league, I would nominate you, not to use an enemy as a reference. Let's say the Kyle Korver. The Kyle Korver of...
Yeah, I'm more of a, I was always more of a Paxton-like.
What was that? A Paxton?
I'm old,
a light
I'm
Paxton?
School. A Paxton. John Paxton. I was more of a... hold it in my holster, ready for somebody else to get double teamed, and then just fucking knock one down from the. I like the deep corner. I had a lot of success in high school in the deep corner three, but I also was, really deadly around that top of the, like right off the top of the circle, a little right or left off the top of the circle, but.
That was the
hot
spot.
If you go to my Instagram, you can see some old throwback Thursday. There's some ones from school where I had some crazy range back in the day. In my
I kind of wanted to talk about that and just you grew up with basketball. You grew up in a basketball household. That I'm sure was discussed regularly at the breakfast, lunch, and dinner table, and probably in the car and everywhere else. What was that like growing up? The son of a coach and knowing
it was great.
Like, did you feel like you had an unfair advantage versus the other kids because you knew plays and things like that, and you understood the game better?
Not at all. I came from the place I come from, Moreno, Ohio, steel country, right outside of Cleveland, right along Lake Erie, Black River, and that is big tough folk. That's big Ten country. That is big-time high school athletics, and there were so many good players and good athletes. I was lucky to be a coach's son, where I probably, at 5'9 and 150, soaking wet, I wouldn't have ended up anywhere near the player I was, and I was just, I was a good, solid high school coach's son. You know, I could shoot, and I worked on my game. But no, but you know, my dad was great about being a parent first, then a coach. He didn't force it down our throat. If you wanted to play, then he expected your dedication to it. But he didn't make you do anything. Other than, you know, at practice. I mean, he was the varsity coach at our program my whole life. He never came down and interfered in any of the feeder program teams that I did. Once in a while, you know, my fifth or sixth grade coach would, you know, hey, would your dad come and speak to the team? And that was a big thrill. All everybody's parents would come up because, you know, my dad's a Hall of Fame coach. He was won over 500 games in Ohio. He was a legend, not just at our school, but, you know, we had one of the top, you know, mid-school programs in Ohio for the length of his career. And so, you know, other than doing that kind of stuff, he didn't fringe, and he let, you know, the teams I played on, me get yelled at by my coach or, you know, said, and that was never even a forethought. Those were usually his schools that he was pulling kids from and support from. All so right. He stayed out of it. And when he ran his program the way he ran his program, and, you know, the coolest thing was my childhood was that he had a lot of great teams and a lot of great players I got to see from the time I was a ball boy, from the time I could run around and help the team. And I was old enough to, you know, 4 or 5 years old, I started as a ball boy running around, you know, filling water bottles and picking up the balls during warm-ups. And as I got older, I would be around the program and practices. And I got to touch and know and meet my heroes. They came to my house to team dinners. You know, I got to, you know, watch them dunk during, you know, practice drills. And I got to shoot, and I got to have them rebound for me and shoot with me and get, you know, when they came over to my house, they'd get on their knees and play Nerf basketball, you know, get down to my size and play one-on-one Nerf with me, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, that's cool because I never had to, like, you know, although I've always had favorite players growing up, you know, in pro sports, I've never had to, like, you know, have to have some hero to look up to, like, you know, and that's I got that kind of experience right in my own living room, so to speak, as a child. And playing for my dad was great, man. He treated me, I would say, tougher because of the fact, but, you know, he treated everybody fairly, and we got great relationships with ex-players over the years. And you know, I was able to, it was really cool because I was lucky enough to be the youngest of 7 kids, so how his career felt. I was a ball boy, equipment manager on his 300th win. I was a player on his 400th win. And then I was a young assistant helping him my first year, kind of in my early 20s, on his 500th win.
Oh, wow.
So I was on the bench. I moved my way up the bench from manager at the end of the bench, player and 400, and then on the other side of the coach with his shirt and tie on for 500.
Oh, man.
Shooter shirt. I wore like a little ball boy shooter shirt. I wore a jersey, and then I wore a suit.
Climbing the ranks. Man, that just sounds incredible. Because you're right. When I remember being in elementary school playing basketball, and there was a local kid that was on the varsity squad. Drew Grisella was his name before I forget. Because I haven't said that name in 20 years, probably. But that guy was like my hero because he would be at the local elementary school shooting, like with me and my friends, and he would give us instruction, advice, play us one-on-one, you know, and just school us. And but when you're a kid and you're on varsity, like, it doesn't get any sweeter than that. Because that's
– No. That's yeah, I got to play on good teams, like state-ranked teams. And, you know, my junior year we went really far and into the tournament. We were a team that kind of got upset in the Sweet 16 game. You know, we were definitely, pretty much everybody thought, you know, pinned us for a Final 14, but the tournament can be tough. You know, my dad had a, you know, that's one thing I had to grow up watching. My dad go through some excruciating tournament losses in his career that just end the road, man. It's just one and you're done. And it's, Ohio's is a, you know, a bitch to get through and win it all. And he got down to the finals twice and, you know, lost by 1 point in 76 and by 5 in 85 and took dozens of teams to the Sweet 16, to the Final 8, and you know, it's tough. A lot of the greatest coaches in Ohio history never even, you know, you get to the finals, it's just, really hard to do. You have to win eight games to win it all in high school in Ohio. And, you know, he had some experience. There's ones that he doesn't even talk about from before. I was the year I was – my mom was pregnant with me. It was one 72. He was an unbearable one for him to talk about because he really thought that that team, you know, he's my brother was on a team that got upset in 79. They were one of the highest scoring teams in Ohio. They were averaging almost 90 a game before the 3-point shot. And
wow,
they got upset in just one of those just horrific tournament losses that you just go back and you just can't even, like, that team probably should have won. You know, at least down to the final eight and had a shot into the final four. But, you know, that was one of those things that, you know, was definitely one of the hard things to bring to the dinner table. There was a lot of tough tournament losses. Well, you know, because there were so many damn good teams. You know, that's the hard part. When you have so many damn good teams that go, you know, 18-2 in the regular season, you know, 19-1, 17-3, 18-2, 17, you know.
Well, I mean, look, Ohio, look, you got Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton, Toledo, and I'm sure I'm leaving off some other cities that are, you know, well populated. I mean, there's a lot of sport being played. That's a big
Dayton, Youngstown, you know, and then there's great basketball all over the state of Ohio. There really is. And, you know, but it's funny, my dad, when he was inducted into the Ohio High School Coaches Hall of Fame in 2002, so he's given his speech and he's talking about the first time he ever saw a state tournament game his senior year in 1956, and he tells this great story of seeing Jerry Lucas from Middletown, who went on to play for Ohio State and the Knicks, great ball player, right? Played with Hal Havlicek at Ohio State. And so he goes, you know, my dad's talking, he goes, I saw Jerry Lucas. He goes, in 1956, in the state Final Four, he scored 52 and 46 back-to-back nights as a sophomore, wins the state championship, was, you know, for Paul Walker, who ended up, Paul Walker is like, the name of the award is named after Paul Walker.
Oh, okay.
Whatever you want, won like six state titles. But anyway, he goes, my dad's talking, he goes, and it's funny because LeBron's in high school at the time, but my dad still recognizes how good he is because he's seen him play before in his first couple state championships as a freshman, sophomore, and seen some tournament games, even though my dad was retired by then. And he's getting inducted, and my dad goes, Jerry Lucas was the greatest high school basketball player I've ever seen in Ohio. He goes, and I've seen most of all the great ones. Clark Kellogg, he goes, even this kid in Akron. My dad says that during the speech. He says, you know, he goes, even this kid in Akron. The funny thing is, he just says this kid, right? He doesn't disrespect him. He actually praises him and brings him into the breath of conversation while he's still in high school. That's how great LeBron was.
Oh, man. But not great enough where he's still the kid.
Well, he's in a speech. He's in a moment.
Yeah,
You see it, the delivering. He's sitting like on Clark Kellogg. You can see him trying to think of, like, you know, this kid here in Akron. He goes, but Jerry was the greatest I ever saw.
He's like,
and it's really cool to see an old school guy talk like that, but still recognize how great this young kid is.
See, as a KU guy for college, that's my college team. I was half expecting him to drop a Kenny Gregory, maybe, as a reference. That would have been nice.
Kenny Gregory. That's funny.
Yeah, but, you know, one, two, three bad back injuries, that'll curb a career real quickly.
That's funny. Yeah, no, Kenny was a great player, but there was a bunch of them. You know, Jim Jackson, you know, that played forever in the NBA for almost every NBA
Michael
team.
Michael Redd.
Ohio State, played on those great Ohio State teams. He was a Toledo Maycumber. He was a phenom as a freshman. He was the LeBron before LeBron. We played against Jerome Lane, who was the first LeBron at Akron King against St. Mary's. You know, the guy that shattered the glass for Pitt and played in the he played for the Nuggets. He played on our home court in 85. My dad seen had this great team, played Akron, St. Vincent, St. Mary's in a regular season game. They beat us by two, ended a big, long home court win streak that had gone on for years at our place. They beat us 70-68. And Jerome Lane had like 35 points and 23 rebounds in that game.
Just cleaning the – just mop it up. That's
but, you know, we had him on the road. But the funny thing is that team got knocked out in the tournament, that Joel Moline team, they were defending state champs from 84. They got beat by the team that beat my dad's team in the finals in 85.
That's
Youngstown Rain beat them and then beat us down in Columbus.
See, and this is exactly why I wanted to have you on. Yeah, you know, talk Cavs and get your inside perspective, or I would say slightly homered perspective on that, but legitimate. Only because it's like you know basketball more than anybody the X's and O's more than anybody that I know personally, and that's kind of why I want, and the history, you know, specifically Ohio, but like as a sports guy, history guy, you know, it's like I love learning that stuff.
Yeah, man, you know, the basketball, like you said, it was what we grew up with, you know, and it was something that I've always loved. I mean, my dad was a great coach, but he had a great program. It was always part of our life. And so, you know, what do? You know, what do? When you love something, you learn everything about it.
Yeah.
You try to be, you know, I was lucky enough. My dad allowed me to coach there. And, you know, I was a freshman boys coach over a period of 3 years. And, you know, it was fun. I sat on my dad's bench for a couple years as his assistant. It was funny because then as I went through school, I went in for radio, and I started doing local radio, and I ended up leaving my dad's bench. And then one time I actually called one of the games, local games for the radio station I worked for, and my dad was coaching. I had to totally be like, you know, unbiased and try to just kind of broadcast the game. Yeah, I was young, and it was, so I did one of those. And
a questionable call from Coach Lawhead.
Around that exposure, all of it, you know, and, you know, always have loved the college game since the time I can remember watching TV. I'm old enough to remember watching Bird vs. Magic in college. I was born in 72. I remember watching that game, Indiana State, Michigan State, on TV. That's one of the greatest memories of my sports childhood, watching those guys. I mean, you know, Isaiah Thomas in Indiana. I mean, that was amazing.
Oh, well, but before you get out of here, I wanted a finals prediction. Is it going seven?
I like our chances. I think I said that already.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say.
I want numbers. No,
I do
numbers.
Like our chances. I mean, Golden State's great, and they are definitely playing on all cylinders. But I think the Cavs interrupt that. I think the Cavs win it in six in Cleveland. I think we take game one, and we dictate the series from there. And I think we change a lot of, like, I think – Vegas sways this week hard after game one. I think, you know, the rest benefits us. There's longer rest in between games. It's not every other day like the conference finals and the semifinals. So now you got LeBron on a little bit further rest in between games. I think that's an advantage for the Cavs. I think that LeBron, you know, doesn't really care deep down. I think after Miami and bringing one to Cleveland, I think LeBron's smart enough because you talk about a guy that knows the history of the game. That's LeBron. He's always appreciated it ever since he was a young kid. And I don't think deep down LeBron even cares whether he's put above Jordan in the GOAT status. I don't believe he needs this to do it. I think he's smart enough to realize there's always going to be people saying, I'm never going to be as good as the GOAT. And you know what? He appreciates the game, and he loves Jordan so much, I don't think it bothers him. I think LeBron, now that he's won in Cleveland, what he knows, it doesn't matter what I do. I could win three in Cleveland, and I'll still say Jordan won one more total.
You know, you're right.
And he knows that.
I think, and look, the NBA is relatively, you know, it's a young league compared to, like, you know, Major League Baseball. It really didn't become popular really until the 70s, let's say, in 80s, you know, really Magic and Bird put it on a national map for everybody. That was back games
Russell
were still
was, without Russell and Dr. J, those guys have nothing to say. But
I guess going from like when they used to tape delay games to like actually airing them live, you know, and these are finals games, I think.
True,
we're still on tape delay in the
right.
70s and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Look, you'll never escape Jordan as a LeBron. My thing is like 10, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, I think when the next great player comes along, it's not going to be, is he as good as Jordan? The question's going to be, is he as good as Jordan in LeBron. I really feel like
there's
never going to be one that's going to overtake another, because until all the Jordan people finally, you know, pass on like 50 years
from now. And I think that, and part of my point is that, and I think LeBron thinks that way too, in the sense that, hey, there's a bunch of people out there that call me the greatest ever. There's a bunch that will never call me the greatest ever. I've had to come to terms with that. I think the title in Cleveland was the medicine that makes him not worry about the ghosts at night.
Yeah.
Some guys worry about the ghosts. And you know what? Jordan's proving to prove to prove to prove that he was going to be the greatest was his motivating factor to become the greatest. LeBron knows he's great. I think he's concerned about being the greatest right now in the game that he's in. And that's, and Jordan did that to that extent as well. When he was in the game he was in, he wanted to be the greatest, and he wanted to be the greatest ever. And that's what nurtured him to that spot. I think LeBron's pure talent, love for the game, and the fact that he wants to be the greatest now, assembled with that body and IQ for basketball and the ability to pass, shoot, rebound, makes him the greatest right now. And if they, if he's in those conversations with Jordan, his hero, the reason he wears number 23, then good for him.
Yes.
And he can sleep at night. And he can sleep at night. And that's why there's a mental edge, I think, for LeBron right now, because there isn't, he, you know, he's not chasing anything that he hasn't had. But he won one in Cleveland. If that's the case, he's got three, and he's just trying to be the greatest right now.
Yep. Yep, and he's doing a wonderful job. Well, and we'll know a lot more here in about 10 days. But
man.
Jason, I appreciate the time. And again, listeners, at
awesome.
At Jason Lawhead on Twitter, jasonlawhead.com, under construction, but I'm sure you go back there in a couple days.
Yeah, but, and, you know, it's there. It'll be there soon. We're
right.
Just going a little more, you know, a little image change.
But in the meantime, guys, if coming up here in June, if you're up at if you're in Reno, go see Jason there. The what was that, the 12th
Laugh Factory at the Silver Legacy Hotel, and then the week after there, I'll be at the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana, and then like
the Las Vegas 24th. That's
Las Vegas. So the nice thing is if this thing goes 6 or 7, I'll be in Reno. So in case we lose, nobody can find me in Reno. And then if we win, I can gamble in Reno.
Nice, man. Well, hey, good luck. And I'm pulling for the Cavs myself. And, you know, maybe we'll try to get together face-to-face here, maybe on a basketball court soon.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'll see you soon. Great talking to you, John. Thanks for having us. Go Cavs, baby. All right. Thanks, man. Awesome. I'll talk to you soon, brother.
See, and it wasn't all about LeBron. It was about I'm glad he brought up the high school stuff, because go look at these videos. They're on Facebook, like he mentioned Instagram, but he's edited together. It's like they're almost like ESPN for 30, like shorts, like the mini shorts kind of thing. And they are wearing mini shorts in a lot of the footage. So there's a lot of mini shorts going on. But definitely check those out, especially if you're a basketball fan. I mean, if you're living in Ohio, you're definitely going to want to see it. But I never envied the coach's kid. You just, no matter how good you did, you're always going to be the coach's son, in the sense that, he got to score 30 because, you know, coach let him shoot 20 times. It's like, well, no, he got to shoot 20 times because he makes 13 of them every time he shoots. And I'm not kidding you guys. With Jay, like, in our comedy league, if he got hot, the game was just over. And it would just be a flurry, like that real quick, like, oh, he just made 3 in a row, and now we're down 20. Oh, okay. We can stop playing now, guys. Game's over. That type of streakiness. And actually, with that way, with his mouth on stage, that's why I highly recommend, if Jason, like he mentioned, if you're in Reno, if you're in Vegas coming up here this June, go see the man at the Tropicana and at the Laugh Factory up in Reno. You'll love it. And, you know, I mentioned the Bill Burr stuff, but look, that's a treat. I would happily go on the road with Bill Burr. But what I'm emphasizing here is it's not a Bill Burr. It has nothing to do with Bill Burr. It has everything to do with just being a funny guy. And so whether he's in Vegas or Reno, I know he's headlines all over the country. Just go to jasonlawhead.com. He's revamping the site, but by the time you listen to this, it'll probably, all the information will probably already be up there. Or you can just go to the Twitter at Jason Lawhead. That's going to wind down this week. This week's episode number 146, the Lee Smith episode. Next week, actually, we're going to have on our man, Don Carlos. So every week we do our plugs, right? When you're in Southern California, you're going to go eat at Don Carlos Taco Shop in La Jolla on Pearl Street, Kitty Catty Corner from the world famous comedy store. That's who we have on next week because he worked in the clubhouse. Brian Don Carlos himself worked for the Padres. So we're going to have him tell some of these. I've heard the stories and they're great stories, which is why we want to have him back on to tell them. So, next week's episode will be, I'd say a special baseball episode just because of some of the stories that we're going to get out of Ryan, AKA Don Carlos. And to continue the plugs, guys, UnionPressKC.com. UnionPressKC.com. If you need any shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, anything printed up, they can design it for you. They have very competitive pricing, very, very quick turnaround, and they'll ship it right to your front door. So if you're in Florida, if you're in Maine, whatever, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, if you need jerseys or like t-shirts for a basketball team, a softball team, you got a small business, a big business, you need some new uniforms for your employees, a family reunion, anything like that, go to unionpresskc.com and check them out. And then last but certainly not least, Pacific Northwest, not New England, hopefully New England later this summer. Eureka, California, Medford, Oregon, Seattle, Tri-Cities, Washington, and a bunch of places in between. I'm going to be coming to your cities next here in 2 weeks, the 12th through the 18th, 3,000 miles, three comics, thousands of jokes. Go to laughprince.com, LAUGHPRINTS, laughprince.com. Find out more information about that. Johnny Scordis, very funny comedian. You've seen him on The Equalizer with Denzel Washington, co-starred with him in that. Seen him on Comedy Central. Sandro Isolano, paid regular at the world famous comedy store. Great comic. So it's going to be the three of us and a couple others, depending on which gig, touring it up. So guys, come out and see that. It's the Northbound by West comedy tour. Volume 1. There will be definitely more of these. So if you're on the West Coast, NorCal, Oregon, Washington, go to laughprince.com. Find a date that's going to be in your area and come laugh. Is that too much to ask? I mean, you live in the middle of Oregon. It's probably overcast, drizzling. The last thing you laughed at was a rerun of the Drew Carey show 2 weeks ago. So just get in your car, drive down to Medford, have a laugh. I think that show is the 17th. I think it's a Saturday. Johnny B's. But again, laughprince.com. Laughprince.com will have all the show information for you guys. That's it. We are done. Eric's in New York, going to be making us all laugh here when those promos come out. And that's the BET Awards, June 25th, 8 p.m. That's a Sunday night. Hosted by Leslie Jones. Written by Eric Marino. Guys, we're out of time. Stay obsessed. We'll be back next week. Lamborghini though, but I never stopped. Didn't fuck around, got a nigga pissed off. Nice little thot, got the stiff arm. Get the heist on the hole, got the stiff arm. Fuck out that bite, like Tyson, the hole is filled. A couple of pills, and I got my soda filled. Break out of sweat, I go head over heels for these meals. She thinks she the one, but to me, she ain't that one to thrill. I've been dripping like a god with her. I've been dodging all the fly with her. I've been filling up garages with her. I gave her her first menage with her. Close your eyes, I'm about to slide. Wonder why, I stay in the sky. Pink Miley, let me dance with her. Freestyling, let me dance with her. Sky's brother, you're the cinnamon. Rose gold, you're the cinnamon. Draco season with the book bag. Rat tag, got a little kickback.
chain my bitches. I'm putting chains on my bitches. I'm putting some chains on the snitches. I focus, I'm back on my mission. Flex on a nigga, no apologies. Smiley all white, done got me. Slam hockey with the ice in the major league. 35 bitches at the St. Ridge. Fire back shooter like Katie. Back in the kitchen with the curry. Pulling up Zach, can't hurt me. Pineapple flame like a surfie. 56 night, I was dirty. Styrofoam cup, 7 patient. Heard you been talking about the kid. Knowing damn well that's a flagrant. I catch some 2 bitches. I got me some new bitches. Come check out how I'm living. I got me some new drip. I got me some new drip. You ain't got nothing to do with it. I give my bitch to you. If that what she mean to you. Draco season with the book bag. Rat tag got a little kickback. Hunters on hunters got a good batch. You ain't never ever get your bitch back. 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 Draco season with the book bag. Rat tag got a little kickback. Hunters on hunters got a good batch. You ain't never ever get your bitch back. 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 Yeah, I cruising in the ditch. I twisted up, I got geek. Misbehaving with you freak. Can't tell she got teeth. I was in the mouth like veneers. Start comparing my career. Designer flooded through the crib. Bentley furniture for real. Bought a Fendi couch for my kids. They just wanna plug a nigga wig. Charge a half a meal for the gig. Middle fingers up, fuck the pig. Diamonds falling off, be letting jig. Never falling off and never quit. I retired cooking up a bread. Certified nigga, hot six. Who was rapping diamonds in the zone? I was charging 10 for the strong. Keep on going in on the song. Keep an effing in at your home. Lesson learned and we moving on. I got firm niggas, Al Capone. Got my shy niggas on the horn. Down.